Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey, Candace.
Marco.
Polo.
Marco.
Polo.
I actually know where Jane is. And we're not in a pool.
Yeah.
We're talking about Marco. We're talking about Marco Polo because he is our topic today. And he's not only the namesake of that very famous pool game, but he's also an established author and traveler and some even say a political advisor, supposedly.
That's right. And he was sort of like the original Indiana Jones. He lived back when basically, Europe didn't know a whole lot about the world around it. And for point of reference, this is about the 13th and 14th centuries.
And he grew up in Italy, in Venice specifically. And his father, Nicola, and his uncle, Maffeo, I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, M-A-F-F-E-O, they were travelers and traders. They were very, very shrewd businessmen, and they anticipated that there is this changing political climate in Constantinople that might enable them to get in on the gem trade, and so they hopped on board. And they were able to make a pretty good amount of money traveling back and forth along the Silk Road, which was a series of trade routes that connected merchants from Central Asia to Europe.
That's right, and unfortunately, because his father was such a traveler, his father and his uncle, they were gone for much of Marco Polo's life until he was about a teenager. But when his father and uncle did come back, they discovered that his mother was dead. But they decided to have Marco continue the family business in sorts. So he actually ended up joining his father and uncle on their next trip back to China.
And the trip took them in total about 24 or 25 years. Historians debate that point. Mm-hmm. But 17 of those years were spent in the court of Kublai Khan. And that was primarily the reason that they went back to China, was because Kublai Khan had asked them to bring back Christian missionaries and holy oil that had been blessed by the Pope. And of course, the Polos obliged. I mean, how do you say no to Kublai Khan?
That's right. Although they weren't totally successful in bringing back the religious men who were supposed to come back and explain and defend Christianity to Khan. When they tried, the Pope actually assigned 2 friars to come with the Polos. Pretty soon after the Polos set out, the friars were like, forget it, I'm heading back, this is too much for us.
Well, it's pretty intimidating because if you think about who Kublai Khan was, he was the Mongol leader, and you remember probably another famous Khan that we've talked about before, Genghis Khan. And these are people who essentially took over this part of China and established their own empire. And they were formerly nomads. And then they realized that if they wanted to have a successful empire, they were going to have to be rooted and stay in place and establish themselves as merchants and traders and craftsmen. And so that's exactly what they did. So they had this very wealthy establishment, but Kublai Khan was interested in learning more about Christianity and also just business skills from outsiders.
That's true, and it was pretty fortunate, considering what you're saying about how important they were in their area, that they showed favor to the Polos. They were, you know, they saw them as like, ooh, special Europeans are coming, and we're going to favor you, and you need to tell us about your culture and have us learn about everything.
And they really liked Marco Polo, especially because he was young and he was bright and he was witty. And apparently he was really good at picking up languages. Mm. And he just really appealed to Kublai Khan. And again, this is debatable, but he was either made a political advisor or some sort of courier or low-level government official by Kublai Khan. And he was given a golden passport, which meant that he could travel to the ends of China and back.
That's right. And because of that, he was able to see all these things that no European had seen before, and just go to the ends of the empire there. And that's why he was able to write about so many amazing things later on.
So he spent, like we said, about 17 years in Kublai Khan's court. And we know that as he and his uncle and father traveled from Venice back to China, they covered about 24,000 miles. And they would have passed through the Middle East, mm-hmm, and Central Asia and then through China. And supposedly there were a lot of new goods that they discovered or that they saw for the first time along the way.
That's right. And legend is, didn't he take back pasta for the first time to introduce it to Italy?
And yeah.
A lot of people today think that, oh, you know, that originated in Italy. You know, they associate spaghetti with Italy. But it was actually Marco Polo who introduced it from China.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
And so in addition to pasta, he saw porcelain and, mm-hmm, silk and coal and his very first compass, and also paper money. And paper money turned out to be a real biggie, because later on in his memoirs, when people were debating whether he had actually seen all of the things that he said,
right,
they were asking, well, you know, you were in China. Where are the mentions of the Great Wall or of foot binding, that practice?
That's right. He left those things out.
Yeah, but he did mention paper money, and, mm-hmm, later on, Europeans did see paper money, and they realized, oh, well, mm-hmm, then, Marco told us that this was coming, and he was right.
That's right.
And even despite acquiring malaria or some other serious illness along the way, he was a hardy little trooper. And once he got to Kublai Khan's court, he was not restless per se, but he wasn't just a sedentary European who came over to soak in the culture. He was very active in communicating with the people and traveling the land and trying to not only discover what all was available out there, but also to keep the trade, the Polo's trade, alive, that business.
That's true, and they were pretty successful. They were able to get a lot of riches on the way. And like you said earlier, like, he picked up on languages so well. I read that the Khan actually sent him on, like, fact-finding missions when he went off to the ends of the empire. And that must have been a cool life, just like, hey, find out this for me and this crazy fact, and he goes and he does it.
That'd be pretty nice. I kind of like a position,
yeah,
like that today. But the thing is, after a while, there was some unrest that started brewing between the Mongols and the Chinese, and the Polos wanted to leave because they saw that things were about to get nasty.
Yeah, not only that, but Kublai Khan was getting kind of old, and once he died, the Polos, you know, they had been shown favor with the Kublai Khan, but once he left, you know, they would not be secure of any favor from the next empire.
Definitely not. So they wanted to go ahead and get out of town, but Kublai Khan said no,
mm-hmm,
and he was really insistent that they were going to stay, and, you know, what were they to do? They were outnumbered. It was 3 against all the Mongols.
Yeah.
But luckily, fortune smiled on them, because a Persian diplomat came over and said that Khan's great-nephew wanted a princess from the Mongol tribe,
mm-hmm,
to marry. And so Khan agreed to let the Polos escort her back to Persia.
So this was their ticket back to Italy afterwards?
Yes.
Okay.
And once they got out of China, they went ahead and went on home to Venice afterward.
Yeah. I read one place, I'm not sure if this is true, but actually as soon as they set foot on like Christian soil again, they actually got robbed. The Polos got robbed of their riches that they had spent, you know, 20 years acquiring in China. And that must have been terribly disappointing.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure, because they were representatives of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing ideals to the Mongols.
But at least he carried with him what he saw.
There you go. And here's where the story gets kind of fishy. And we've been saying, you know, words like supposedly and debatably. And the reason for that is because there are a lot of scholars and historians, both contemporary to Marco Polo and mm-hmm. today, who debate the authenticity of his accounts. And we should mention that his accounts were titled The Description of the World, or alternately titled The Travels of Marco Polo. And these were not slight books, or a slight book, rather.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a pretty hefty tome.
Mm-hmm.
And Marco Polo didn't write it himself.
That's right. He was actually imprisoned when he got back to Italy, which it happened because he got involved in a battle between the Venetians and the Genoese. And at this time, you know, before Italy was unified or and everything like that, these were actually two republics, and they were rivals at the time. So he was imprisoned by the Genoese, and while he was in prison, he actually met up with a popular writer of the time. He wrote romances. And so he would dictate, Polo would dictate his what he saw in China, his travels, and the writer actually wrote it down for him.
And the writer's name was Rusticello,
mm-hmm.
and he was a member of, I think, the French court. And so he would have been writing to entertain nobles. And so
okay.
some people think that he embellished Marco Polo's stories. And they were translated first into French and then into, I think, 150 different languages or disseminated to 150 different countries. And so you can imagine, it's almost like that game of telephone that you play when you're a child. You
sure,
pass along
yeah.
a secret from one ear to the next. By the time you get back to the person who originated the secret, it's been altered in some way.
That's right. And there's no original manuscript for which to, like, refer back to.
Exactly.
And this is even assuming that Rusticello actually wrote down faithfully everything that Polo said. It's possible, because he was such a, you know, he was a writer of romances, that he might have embellished things that Polo said.
Precisely. And so by the time it got through with several different editors and translators, the story was not in its original form by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But then Marco Polo, later on his deathbed, he was asked to retract the things that he had said. And he commented, "I only told half of what I saw."
That's right. He stuck to his story.
He did. And not only that, he said, "You know, if I had told you really what I had seen, you guys wouldn't have believed me any more than you believe what I did tell you."
And, right.
And that's true, because you think about the fact that China was such a mystery to the Europeans. Not only was it far away, but they were isolated by treacherous terrain and mountains and oceans, and they had no idea what was going on over there, except for the goods that they saw come down the Silk
That's
Road.
True. And it should be noted, like, sort of to defend Polo, but also to explain maybe some inaccuracies in his story, was that he didn't talk about everything he saw. Like, everything he wrote in the book weren't things that he personally saw, but he got secondhand descriptions of from people he met there. And so if those were wrong, he wouldn't have known. But he told his side of the story, what he knew.
Right. And
yeah.
whether or not it is true, all of the accounts.
Right.
It forever changed how Europe regarded China. It gave rise to the first maps that Europe made
mm-hmm.
of parts of Asia and of China, and even influenced later explorers like Christopher Columbus, who was trying to find the Orient based on the descriptions and coordinates that Marco Polo gave. And in
yeah.
1492, I think we all know where he ended up.
That's right.
Not the Orient. So, and one of my favorite parts of the Marco Polo story is a little bit juicy and tawdry and pulpy, really, because we know from most accounts that he married a Venetian woman named Donata, and he had three daughters. But there are some accounts, or some legends, rather, that say he didn't marry an Italian woman. He married a woman that he met in Kublai Khan's court, actually his daughter, Hao Dong. And supposedly, Hao Dong traveled with him and his uncle and father,
okay.
and then returned with Marco to Venice. And she was ostracized by the people because she was so different. So she
Aww.
Would lock herself in her room and sing, which was her only comfort. She had a beautiful singing voice. And then we know that Marco came to be arrested. And in this version of the story, he wasn't arrested for leading an uprising against the Genoese.
Hmm.
He was arrested because he'd married a non-Christian, and the Catholic Church had been eyeballing
scandalous.
Him.
Scandalous. That's an interesting
It gets even
story.
More.
Okay.
Even more scandalous.
Okay.
Because then, supposedly, his sister Lucia lied to Hao Dong and said that he had died. And she was so upset that she set her clothes on fire and hurled herself into the canals.
Wow.
So if you're in Venice today, you can hear her.
Oh, this is a ghost
singing.
Story there.
It's a ghost
okay,
story.
Yeah,
you can hear her singing by
yeah.
the canals.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go there and check that out.
Exactly that. I'm actually on my way right now, so we're going to have to cut this short.
Oh, okay.
The point being, you know, we don't know definitively whether or not Marco Polo's accounts were true, and we don't know definitively all the details of his biography.
Yeah.
So we've done a quick history of Marco Polo.
And it only takes a click of a mouse to go to our website and learn about anything from Marco Polo, the history of China, or anything under the sun.
Even Genghis Khan, the man who started all before Kubla.
That's
and
right.
That's on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.